So the purpose of my talk today is actually twofold. The first part of my talk is a brief description of the recent activity to measure theta mass 3 using reactor neutrinos in Japan. And the second part of my talk will be the brief description of so-called parameter degeneracy problem in long baseline experiment and how to resolve the so-called theta 2-3 ambiguity by using long baseline experiment plus reactor neutrino experiments. Actually, the second part of my talk is almost exactly the same as my talk at the noon conference 2 weeks ago in Japan. And actually, this guy, student of ours, Mr. Sugiyama, told me right after my talk that nobody at the conference understood my talk because my presentation was terrible. So today I would encourage everybody. Anyway, so I would encourage everybody to interrupt me whenever you guys have a question. Actually, this talk is based on this paper. Three of us are from TMU, and two of the authors are from Cameron. Well, this is the only one-sheet slide for the introduction. And as everybody knows, in three-flavor framework of neutrino oscillation, there are actually 7 parameters. And from solar neutrino oscillation experiment plus Cameron, we know to a certain extent the allowed region of delta m squared 2-1 and theta 1-2. And from atmospheric neutrinos, we know the absolute value of the larger delta m square, delta m square 3-2, and theta 2-3. And what we don't know to date is sine of delta m square 3-2, which corresponds to the pattern of the mass hierarchy, and theta 1-3, and finally the CP phase delta. And I think everybody agrees that final goal in neutrino oscillation physics is the measurement of CP violation. And incidentally, this is only possible for large mixing angle solution. And fortunately, nature seems to be chosen the large mixing angle solution. So in a vacuum, probability of CP violation is proportional to so-called ER scope factor here, which is proportional to sine 2 theta 1-2, sine 2 theta 1-3, sine 2 theta 2-3, and sine delta. And this, we almost know the value. The only actually thing we don't know is this and this. So as a first step to measure CP violation, we need to know the magnitude of theta 2, theta 2-3, theta 2, theta, sine 2 theta 1-3. And as I will mention later, long baseline experiment and reactor neutron experiments are, in a sense, complementary. The reason is because, as I will explain later, there is so-called the problem of parameter degeneracy. And long baseline experiment is known to suffer from some ambiguity due to parameter degeneracy. But as far as theta 1-3 is concerned, reactor neutrino experiment does not have any such ambiguity. But on the other hand, if we talk about sensitivity to theta 1-3, for example, the last phase was phase 2 or 3 or whatever, JHF has sensitivity of sine squared to theta 1-3 down to about 10 to the minus 3, while the reactor neutron experiment only has sensitivity to 10 to the minus 2, or probably 0.02 or something like that. So first of all, let me briefly describe the recent activity to measure theta 1-3 using reactor neutrinos. Actually, these two gentlemen from Tohoku University are the core members of Camland experiments. And I think they are already bored with Camland experiment, and they are now thinking seriously about measuring theta 1-3 using reactor experiments. Actually, to be specific, they are considering seriously the site of Kashiwazaki Kariwa nuclear power plant. Actually, this turns out to be the largest in the world. actually, this is, well, several more transparencies are from Suikane-san's talk somewhere else. Actually, this gives the argument what kind of condition is required for the measurement of theta mass 3. So first of all, the optimization of baseline. Since we know that delta m square of atmospheric neutrino is something like 2.5 times 10 to the minus 3 v square, it turns out that in order to maximize this quantity, the baseline should be close to 1.7 kilometers. And this actually implies that without any oscillation, neutrino events, well actually anti-neutrino events, is something like 150 events per year per target ton per thermal gigawatt. And in order to require 1% systematic error per year, it turns out, well, since 1% statistical error requires 10,000 events, it requires something like 70 ton times thermal gigawatts to achieve error. And in a couple of minutes, I will show you how important the reduction of error in this business is. So this is the list of the large power plant, nuclear power plant in the world. And we are proud that we do have the largest nuclear power plant in Japan. This is actually Kashiwazaki Kariwa nuclear plant. And there are other, like Fukushima or Oi, somewhere else in Japan. So if we can put a detector near the Kashiwazaki Kariwa nuclear plant, probably what we get is a 5-ton target detector with 80% reactor efficiency and 70% detection efficiency. These are the figures which are supposed to be realistic.
That 2014 was, I was told once that that comes from actually several reactors that are some distance from each other, roughly 3 gigawatts thermal E.
Right.
Okay, but you quoted a distance of 1.7.
Right.
Is it clear that the separation between the individual reactors is small compared to?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a good question. Let me give you a figure. Well, actually, this is a configuration map of Kashiwazaki Kariwa reactor. And as you pointed out, there are 3 bunches of reactors here and 4 bunches of reactors here. And they are apart by 2 kilometers. But they are now thinking that on this middle line, from here to here, 1.7 kilometer, and put the far detector here, so that the distance from the far detector to here and here is supposed to be almost the same. Yeah, actually, I will mention about this later in more detail. So let's see. So actually, the most recent nuclear reactor neutron experiment tried to measure theta 1-3 was show experiment. And they had a systematic error 2.7%. And well, the details is described, blah, blah, blah. And in order to get the better sensitivity, it is absolutely necessary to reduce the systematic error. So one idea is to put the identical detectors at the far detector and the near detector. And actually, it was a kind of done by Bouget experiment. They put 3 identical detectors at far and near detector. And in the case of Bouget, by putting the same detector at 2 distances, they could reduce the systematic errors of flux and cross-section from 2.8% to 0, and number of target 1.9 to 0.6%. And baseline is kind of large because they were using 15 meters or 90 meters, which is relatively much shorter compared to Tsho. And the directional efficiency is also somehow reduced to 1.7%. So in total, by putting two detectors or three detectors in the case of PJ, they could reduce the systematic errors from 4.9 to 2%. So by applying the naive argument to show the experiment, we could imagine that we could reduce the systematic error from 2.7% to 0.8%.
Was this a quoted error of Bouget, or is
it? Yeah, actually, this is a quoted error from Bouget. So the idea is put the identical Tsho-like detector at the near side and far side, so that the systematic error is expected to be reduced. So let me give you some explicit calculations. Assuming 24.3 gigawatt thermal power and 80% operational efficiency and 70% detection efficiency at far detector 1.7 kilometer and near detector at 0.3 kilometer. And assuming we do have 14 bins of 0.5 MeV, the result can be shown in the next graphs. This is, first of all, the excluded region. The red line is actually the current most sensitive constraint from Tsho. And the yellow band stands for the allowed region of delta M square from atmospheric neutrinos. And I think what you have to look at is this violet line, which actually corresponds to 0.8% and 20 ton year detector. So if we can achieve this systematic error and detector times number of the duration with Kashiwazaki Kariwa reactor neutrino experiment. If things can be done literally as it is, then we could reach as far as 0.015 or something like that. Of course, it may be too optimistic. But even, what?
Which confidence level?
This is 90%. Everything 90% confidence, sorry. And if we are not so lucky, but it is still possible to reach this Bouget type detector. And in that case, probably we could reach 0.04 or 5. But still, we can reduce factor of 2 compared with show experimental bound.
How will you know what systematic error you reach is really the question, I
guess. Well, since I'm not the experimentalist, I cannot answer your question, but somehow two guys from Tohoku University are telling us that they are expecting to reach this systematic error, yeah, by doing all kinds of R&D.
It looks from the geometry that you showed that putting that near detector is going to be more problematic than it was for Bouget.
Right. Actually, they have to put two near detectors, one here and one down here, so that the distance shouldn't be any problem.
And is it clear to theorist who doesn't really know these details that you're supposed to add systematic errors in quadrature?
Well, of course, in order to write a proposal, of course, one has to do much more detailed research. But we haven't done that yet.
What kind of threshold do you use?
Let's see.
So it must be very sensitive to that.
Well, since we are talking about a rather short baseline experiment, background from geoneutrinos is completely negligible. So I think we are using almost all the energy range. In other words, from 0.5 MeV to all the way to 7 MeV.
Kim, that has to be the background, because your chemical field,
you know. Could you also find that one with the follow-up possible? The one with the limits.
This.
So basically, you go from the green. Green is essentially what
Bouguer
achieved.
Right.
To the black, to the purple, black, and red. So those are all more and more optimistic or realistic. How everyone looks at estimates of the systematic errors.
Right. And actually, in the case of a Bouguer-like detector with systematic error 2%, this is allowed region once we have affirmative result. Namely, the horizontal axis is sine squared 2 theta 1 3, and the vertical axis is delta m squared. And well, of course, it depends on the time schedule of this experiment. But probably by the time that this kind of reactor experiment is done, maybe we know more about the precise value of delta m square, 1.3 or 3.1, from long baseline experiments. So probably this information is not so useful, but the horizontal axis gives us that.
What I'm saying, I see. This is assuming you use.
Well, I'm not assuming any.
Curves are for different assumed values than what you.
Oh, yeah, right. Assuming the central value.
The one issue is, the principle, and these curves are what, 90% confidence?
Yeah, 90%, right.
So you would say that if the number is.
And this is.
The claim would be the death data is 0.05, you could almost claim a discovery of non-zero.
Right.
Which is the main issue.
Yeah. So probably in this case, probably the sensitivity is 0.24.
Uncertainty
and
delta m squared. Well, delta m squared is a vertical axis.
Because this is a two degrees of freedom. Yeah. And in the case of more optimistic case, namely a Shor-like detector, namely a 0.8% systematic error with 20 ton year at the Kashiwataki Kariba reactor. This is the allowed region. So the in other words, this the widest plus minus central value here corresponds to the experimental error coming from this reactor neutron experiments. And it turns out actually, irrespective of the number of the central value, these things 0.2, 0.02, 0.03, 0.03, blah blah blah, the error, experimental error, is almost the same.
Right.
Actually, throughout my talk, I'm assuming that we can do energy spectrum analysis. So much with the nuclear reactor experiments. And let me go on to the parameter generality discussions. Actually, in the first part, I could have been pretty pessimistic. In other words, even if the future, near future long baseline experiment does not see any appearance from nu mu to nu e, because theta 1.3 is so small, the reactor neutrino experiments also can confirm the negative results of the deficit if theta 1.3 is very small. But in the second part of my talk, I have to be extremely optimistic. The reason is because if we do not see any deficit in the reactor neutron experiment, the whole argument in this part is completely useless. Because I have to assume that we do see a deficit in reactor neutron experiments. And also, we have to see the appearance of long baseline experiment from nu mu to nu e, and nu mu bar to nu e bar. Okay. Assuming those optimistic conditions, let me introduce notations of probability for nu mu to nu e and nu mu bar to nu e bar, which I denote p bar. And it has been known by a lot of works which are described here, that even if we are given exact value of p and p bar, there are still eight possible solutions due to three kinds of so-called degeneracy. And instead of explaining these things one by one, I will use the plot of p and p bar in the plot of sine square theta 2,3 and sine square 2 theta 1,3. And of course, for simplicity of the argument, I will assume that accelerator beam in long baseline experiments is almost monochromatic, and also experimental errors in long baseline experiments are not taken into account. So actually, the most realistic so-called super beam conventional neutrino experiment is JHF. And in JHF, there are actually three dimensionless parameters, which is denoted by theta 2,3 minus pi over 4, and the ratio of smaller delta m square by larger delta m square, and matter effect times baseline. Matter effect A stands for square root 2 times Fermi constant times electron density, and L stands for the length of baseline. Actually, these are the figures for the realistic JHF experiment. We know from atom-sec neutrino experiment that sine squared 2 theta 2,3 is larger than 0.92, and this ratio, using the best fit value of solar neutrinos and atom-sec neutrinos, is something like 1 over 35. And in the case of JHF experiment, since the baseline is 295 kilometers, this factor AL divided by 2, which appears typically in the probability of P and P bar, this is something like 1 over 13. So in the following discussions, I will assume that in the zeroth approximation, all these dimensionless parameters are zero. But by switching on one parameter by one by one, I will show that each degeneracy is lifted. Actually, this is in the simplest case, they are all zero, and then three degeneracy gives you exactly the same solution due to perfect degeneracy. But if you lift this condition to non-zero, then one of the degeneracy is lifted. And if you lose the second condition, then the second degeneracy is lifted. And finally, if you assume that all of these dimensionless parameters are non-zero, then all of the degeneracy are lifted. So I will use a plot of sine square theta 2,3 and sine square theta 2 theta 1,3. So this is the simplest case. Atom-sec neutrino is has maximal mixing, and solar neutrino is absent, and matter effect is absent. And in that case, we know, of course, that appearance probability for neutrinos and antineutrinos are the same, and given by sine square theta 2,3 times sine square 2 theta 1,3 times this factor. And since we are assuming that, of course, our baseline is fixed and delta m square is fixed, and we assume that energy is monochromatic, and therefore this is constant. So, and actually, in this case, we also assume that this factor is 1/2. So this times this is constant, means that it is an inversely proportional function. And since we assume that theta 2,3 is 45 degrees, there is only one point solution. And since actually, there are three-fold degeneracy, eight-fold degeneracy. Actually, it turns out that this point corresponds to eight-fold solution, which exactly degenerated. Now, let me turn to the second case, which is actually given by deviation from pi over 4, or theta to 3. And in that case, probability is still given by the vacuum probability, namely P and P bar are the same, and given by this formula. The only difference in this case is that since sine squared 2 theta 1, 2, 3 is not assumed to be 1, there are actually two possibilities from this quadratic equation. So actually, there are two possible points here and here, and they correspond to four-fold solutions. Now, let me go to the more complicated case. Actually, from this point on, I have to assume that somehow P and P bar are given, but different value. Because if P and P bar are exactly the same, there is no room for the contribution coming from the solar neutrino delta M square or CP violation term to appear. So I am assuming here that P and P bar are different in this particular case. And actually, here I am using some approximation formula, which is known to be valid for at least JHGF case and also neutrino factor case. Namely, appearance probability of new mutant E is given by formula like this. X and Y stands for sine 2 theta 1, 3, or sine 2 theta 1, 2, and epsilon stands for the ratio of smaller delta M square by larger delta M square. And F and G stands for some complicated function of matter effect times baseline. And similarly for appearance probability for antineutrino. Oh, there's one part missing. We do have a similar formula. I will explain this thing later. So anyway, getting back to the original graph. in this case, in general, P and P bar satisfy a quadratic equation. Well, actually, if you look at x squared has to satisfy quadratic equation, which is actually given by the two formula, eliminating delta, CP violating phase delta.
You're eliminating the
CP violating delta.
Phase,
yes, phase, right.
That's solved for separately.
Right. So anyway, in general, there are two solutions at given value of other parameters. So that's why at given value of sine theta 2, 3, there are actually two solutions.
But and you must have assumed some value for delta or not, or it's independent
of delta? No, actually, each point on this green curve corresponds to different value of delta. Actually, CP phase. So, since I'm also assuming that theta 2, 3 is not maximal mixing, there are actually four solutions which corresponds to two-fold solutions. Now, let me switch on the matter effect. Actually, by oscillation maximum, I mean delta M square of atmospheric neutrinos times baseline divided by 4e is not pi over 2. By oscillation maximum, I always mean that the larger delta M square times baseline divided by 4e is pi over 2. Okay, in that case, it turns out that depending on the mass hierarchy or depending on the sign of delta, larger delta M square, there are actually two curves.
It says matter effects on it?
What?
It says matter?
Yes.
Yes.
And this is the normal long baseline?
Well, this is a normal hierarchy.
I'm saying, this matter, are you talking about the JHF experiment?
Yes. Binomial, you mean the conventional he says so, neutrino factor.
Short distance or the
JHF, yes. Actually, in the case of larger baseline, the deviation is actually even farther. Well, also, actually, in this graph, I'm not actually particularly paying attention to specific figures or specific value or the parameters. But anyway, this is what happens if you turn on the matter effect. And in this case, the formula which x squared has to satisfy is still quadratic in x squared, but it is much more complicated. And in general, there are 8 solutions. And actually, in this case, there is no degeneracy of the parameter anymore. So the 8-fold degeneracy is completely lifted. And the problem is this, is that probably using the old standard technique of long baseline experiment detection, probably it is rather difficult to distinguish each of these 8 solutions. Because these 8 solutions are given even if we know exactly the value of P and P var at the same time. So that's the problem of ambiguity due to the 8-fold degeneracy. Now, let me go to the oscillation maximum case with the same condition. By oscillation maximum, I mean the delta m square of atmospheric neutrino times baseline divided by 4e is pi over 2. And in that case, each curve shrinks to one line for each mass hierarchy. And it turns out that, in fact, this corresponds to 2-fold degenerate solutions. So even if there are some potential ambiguities due to 8-fold parameter degeneracy, if we do experiment at oscillation maximum, the things are better. Also, we are still suffering from the degeneracy due to theta 2, 3, and to pi over 2 minus theta 2, 3. Okay, now, well, actually, there are some details like why. Well, this is some details, but why this purple line is very close to the green line in the horizontal axis, but why the end point for this is very far away from the end point of green line, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out that if you do some calculations using the approximation formula for P and P bar, one can show that this at given value of theta 2, 3, the difference between this and this is given by p bar. Well, in this case, p bar is assumed to be larger than p. So p bar minus p times matter effect times baseline. And in the case of difference of this and this in a vertical axis, this difference turns out to be proportional to 1 over epsilon square. Epsilon stands for the ratio of two different delta m squares. So there is an enhancement in this case. So that's why these two endpoints are slightly far away compared with the difference in horizontally, the point and here, and the point here. So now let me go to some particular scenario to resolve the theta 2, 3 ambiguity. Actually, this was qualitatively discussed by Fourier and Lissy and Barion and Andre some time ago. Our discussion here uses the numerical calculation assuming a hypothetical experiment at Kashiwazaki-Kariba nuclear reactor. And as our scenario can be stated as follows. Namely, we assume that somehow we know the data of JHF for appearance of neutrinos and appearance of antineutrinos at oscillation maximum. And then we also assume that affirmative result of reactor neutrino experiment and at Kashiwazaki Kariwa nuclear power plant. And then, actually, basically, there are two cases. The case A is almost theta 2, 3 is maximal mixing. Namely, in the plot I mentioned earlier, the four different solutions are almost degenerate. And in that case, probably even with a precise measurement of the parameters at long baseline experiment and nuclear reactor neutrino experiment, it is rather difficult to distinguish these faults. But as long as they are very close, probably it's okay. We don't have to worry about the distinction between those four different solutions. But if theta 2, 3 turns out to be rather far away from pi over 4, then by the data of appearance of neutrinos and appearance of antineutrinos of JHF, we do have a situation like this, and we cannot distinguish just from JHF these two closed solutions from these two closed solutions. So as I said before, this pink line stands for the, in this particular case, inverted mass hierarchy, and green line stands for normal hierarchy. Probably from JHF experiment alone, we cannot distinguish the matter effect. In other words, probably these two things are almost degenerate, and we cannot distinguish from JHF experiment. So now, so let me discuss in more detail the B case. And in that case, the assuming the most optimistic case, in other words, systematic error can be achieved to 0.8%, then the situation does look like this. The purple, well, I'm actually taking some extreme example so that there, these two solutions are actually quite far away. I'm assuming that P bar for antineutrinos is 3.5% and 2.5% for neutrinos. And in that case, this, well, and also theta 2, 3 can be larger than pi over 4 or can be smaller than pi over 4. This is a graph in the case theta 2, 3 is smaller than pi over 4. And so in that case, this turns out to be the real solution, and this is a fake solution. And as I said, JHF experiment alone cannot distinguish these two. But this shadowed region corresponds to the error due to the reactor neutron experiment with optimistic systematic errors, like 0.8%. So if that is the case, we can certainly distinguish this from this. And in the later discussion, I will denote delta degeneracy as an ambiguity due to the degeneracy of theta 2, 3.
Where are the points corresponding to
theta
2, 3 being larger than pi over 4?
Right. Actually, that is my next graph.
No, I mean on
that
one.
What?
That determines where the reactor solution ends up.
So I'm saying that if this reactor error is very small, we should be able to know that which solution is real and which one is fake.
Yeah, but here you assume that theta 2 being less than pi over 4 is known, right?
No, I'm not assuming.
Yeah, that's the blue point. The blue point. He wants to put one over the other.
So actually, if you want to assume that theta 2, 3 is larger than pi over 4, this is the case. And this turns out to be the real solution, and the blue one is the fake solution. And as I said, as long as this, this error is smaller than this ambiguity, we should be able to distinguish them.
Well, this assumes precise knowledge of the mass square difference
ratio, is
that right? Right. Which we don't have at this point.
Right. Yeah, actually, right, actually, I'm getting that point in a couple of minutes.
I mean, there's another scenario, right, which is that if you do this reactor experiment, and it happens to exclude only one possibility. I mean, you don't have to do a very good measurement, but you just have to exclude the large size square to theta point. So let's say that you have an excluded region that excludes this blue point. Then you're in business, right? Then you've solved this degeneracy problem for free as well.
You mean the negative result at Newton? Yeah, right, right, right. Okay, so actually, in the rest of my talk, I will briefly mention what would be the value of ambiguity due to the degeneracy and comparison with the error of neutrino reactor neutrino experiments. Actually, it has been known by the work by Vernon and his collaborator that degeneracy due to theta 2,3, given divided by sine squared to theta 1,3, can be written like this. And it turns out that it is proportional to the absolute value of 1 minus tangent squared theta 2,3 and something. And actually, in the case of best fit value of delta m square for solar neutrinos and atom-thick neutrinos, the second term, which are quadratic in the ratio of these two mass square differences, is negligible. But however, if you take the extreme case, namely the largest value in the 90% allowed region for solar neutrinos, and the smallest value for the 90% allowed region for atom-thick neutrinos, this term actually is not necessarily negligible. And so in that case, actually this is a graph of ambiguity of sine squared to theta 3 due to the degeneracy of theta 2,3 divided by the value of midpoint. Namely, the one half, the denominator is one half of the real solution and the fake solution. And if you plot this thing, in the case of best fit value, namely, in that case, the ratio of two delta m squares is given by 2.8%. No matter what value sine squared 2 theta 1,3 takes, or sine square 2 theta 2,3 takes, they are almost approximately by the first term in the analytic formula in the previous transparency. But in the case of most pessimistic case that I mentioned earlier, namely 12% for this ratio, then sometimes depending on the value of sine square 2 theta 1,3, it cannot be described by the first term at all. So in that case, of course, we would have to worry about the second term contribution. And in fact, in this case, since the ambiguity due to theta 2,3 is so small, like 0.03 for sine squared 2 theta 1,3, the reactor neutrino experiment is hopeless to remove the degeneracy. But as far as we are across the best fit value, then there should be no problem. And so what we have to compare is the two figures. This is a reactor experiment error. Delta reactor in sine squared 2 theta 1,3 divided by the central value of sine squared 2 theta 1,3. So depending on the systematic error you can reach, it gives you some various results. And this is actually the one I showed you some time ago in the exclusion plot, 0.8% and 20 ton year with 2 degrees of freedom. But probably by the time that this neutrino reactor experiment is done, JHF experiment at phase one, or maybe two, is supposed to give us the precise value of delta m squared 3.2. So in that case, we can do a one-dimensional analysis. In other words, degrees of freedom of one stands for the only the parameter is sine squared 2 theta 1.3. And in that case, error can be reduced to 0.012 in the most optimistic case. So this is a normalized error due to reactor neutrino experiment. And this, well, of course, it depends on the sine of theta 2.3 minus pi over 2. But this is actually the normalized ambiguity of degeneracy divided by sine squared 2 theta 1.3. So these two quantities should be compared like this. Also, the horizontal axis is completely different. So suppose we have an affirmative result for sine squared 2 theta 1.3 from reactor neutron experiment, like 0.04. We have an error like this. So now let's look at the same value of this. So if 2.3 turns out to be smaller than 45 degrees, then as long as sine squared 2 theta 2.3 is smaller than 0.98 or something, the difference due to degeneracy is larger than the error of reactor neutrino experiment. So in principle, for that case, we should be able to resolve the ambiguity. And in the case that theta 2.3 is larger than 45 degrees, the thing, our situation is even better. And for the same value like this, probably if sine squared 2 theta 2.3 is smaller than 0.99, in principle, we should be able to resolve the ambiguity due to theta 2.3. So, basically, this is the conclusion of my talk. And let me summarize. Well, I didn't emphasize at all, reactor neutrino experiments on theta 1.3 is supposed to be much cheaper. And of course, it depends on the location of the site. But it may be done earlier even than JHF. And sensitivity in the most optimistic case can be reached down to 0.013 with actually 1 degree of freedom, assuming the JHF experiment is supposed to provide us a precise value of delta m squared. And as I emphasized in the part two, if the sine squared 2 theta 2.3 is smaller than certain value, and sine squared 2 theta 1.3 is larger than certain value, then a reactor neutrino experiment may be able to determine the value of sine squared 2 theta 1.3 and sine squared theta 2.3 at the same time as a true solution. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
I'm sure you and your colleagues have thought about it, but if systematic errors are the thing that are plaguing you, might it not be better to go to two different sites and maybe integrate for twice as long?
Right. So actually, one of my colleagues is thinking is that, in fact, literally to exchange two identical detectors at certain point so that systematic may be canceled.
But when you say may be done earlier, what is your best guess when the JHF might be done?
Well, that is the most difficult question. And of course, it depends on the possibility to get grant from the government. Even at the earliest, they say that it takes maybe a few years to do some R&D. So starting
for the beam?
Well, no. Actually, I'm talking about the reactor neutron experiment.
The reactor.
Yeah.
I think. Well, okay. Let's do both. Yeah. First, if we do the JHF because you have two things here: much cheaper and maybe done earlier.
Yeah.
I agree that much cheaper.
Yeah.
But maybe done earlier. How long do you think it will take to get the JHF going? And then what do you think would be the reactor time scale?
Well, in the case of
0.8% systematic error is nearly impossible to achieve. But let's assume you might be able to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
What are your time scales here?
Well, first of all, in the case of JHF, since neutrino beam line is not funded yet, my guess is that they will start the neutrino experiment from 2008 instead of 2007. Now, assuming that these two people from Cameland take a few years for R&D, starting from next year on, actually, next fiscal year, meaning 2003, they may be able to start experiment by 2006. But that is only my personal opinion.
Which means about 4 years of running.
Oh, yeah, right.
Five tons.
Yeah, right.
Years.
Right.
It seems to me they're very comparable in time to the JHF and the SIG reactors.
Maybe, yeah, right.
Actually, I was asking essentially a similar question. Oh. What is really happening with this experiment and the R&D for it? And is there a proto collaboration and stuff?
No, not really. Actually, the only people who might be related to this project is only these five people. And actually, I was kind of embarrassed at the noon conference that these five people are called the working group. But I didn't realize that I was even in a working group yet. What?
There's also a Russian group that has talked
about. Oh, yes. Krasnaya's care to death.
Yes.
But they have a lot of problems. And first of all, the funding possibility is not clear at all. And also, they have the baseline like 1.0 kilometer instead of 1.7. And the sensitivity is not expected to reach down to 0.2 or 0.3, whatever.
Yeah. Wrote a paper on that, right?
What? Oh, yeah. Right. Actually, I do have a slide here. Let me see. I think this is it. And the reason that they, but actually this is in the case of 3.5 times 10 to the minus 3. So if we assume that 2.5 10 to the minus 3, probably the sensitivity that they are talking about is pretty close to ours. But actually they are assuming that the systematic error is 0.5%. The reason for this is because, well, I don't know how they estimated this number. Maybe they are extremely optimistic. But the reason that they do have the same sensitivity, even though they do have more optimistic value of systematic error, is because their baseline is shorter than ours. So actually, if the larger delta M square is actually found like this, their sensitivity would be even better. But since they have shorter baseline than ours, their sensitivity is worsened a little bit. But
were they restricted in your choice of baseline?
Well, basically, this is a military base or something underground. And there is a fixed excavation. And there is no way for them to extend the excavation at all. So that's their problem.
Would this be underground or
the Kashiwazaki? Yeah, that's a good question. Well, In order to eliminate possible neutron background, they have to dig a hole like 200 meter deep.
For each of these?
For the far detector. For near detector, it's actually shallow, like 60 meters deep.
So they have to just find the megas on the underground.
Right.
And so the proposal would be now to use what sort of tonnage? 5 tons or 20 tons detector?
Well, originally they are thinking of 5 tons times 4 years.
And it would be what, something like Cameron?
No, actually Cameron is 1 kiloton. So it's much, much smaller.
No, but I mean the type of detector.
Oh, type is the same as Cameron. Yeah.
I have another question. And what's the status of the CHOS 3 detector right now?
Oh, it has been shut down for many years.
What are the detectors? Do you know where what's the status of the CHOS site altogether? Because that seems to be a good place to do this, right? I mean, it's.
Yeah.
You have to work that in somewhere else.
Right, actually, once again, they have shorter baseline, like 1.2 kilometers something. That's and also, it is rather difficult to put a near detector.
Why?
Well, they have to get some kind of authorization to start the experiment. And well, the only good news for our project is that since Cameron has a nice relationship with electric power plant company, they are actually willing to cooperate with them. And yes, they can have already negotiated with them, and there is a good chance that they can dig a hole near the near site.
For whatever reason, I communicated with these people who had discussed doing a new experiment, and the communication I got was that at the moment they don't think it. They had an article in some conference talking about plans, and then when he asked them about them, they said at the moment don't have them.
Well, the fact that Bouget only got 2% systematic error, that would be worrisome. And they have 3 detectors, basically.
Right.
So you have to do quite a bit better. It's not clear how you do better, but I haven't seen the proposal right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know either, but yeah, that's why they need a lot of R&D in the future.
By the way, 0.5 is even more bizarre.
Yeah, right, that's right.
Which is more bizarre?
I say, look, it's very hard. Very few experiments have ever achieved this kind
of thing. Oh, I see, 0.5 systematic.
Maybe
that's
on the problem.
Well,
so it's it's around 1%
experiment.
Epsilon prime. So you have an epsilon prime is not.
Because there's a 1 minus 6 yeah. Epsilon prime over epsilon. So it's a random one.
And that's a heroic experiment.
With millions and millions of events.
Plus a control reactor with an accelerator beam and so forth. So these are not obvious if you reach the systematic error something.
Yeah, yes.
Try.
Well, I guess in order to do the experiment, one has to be optimistic.
The only thing that bothers me is I'm not certain you'll ever know. Is there any feature of the spectrum or anything that you could look at that would tell you what you're seeing is not misunderstood systematic error, or is it just the rate changes in the 2 detectors? Spectral feature or anything like that. That would be nice if it was a spectral feature.
Right.
Need more energy, more high energy events or less high energy events or something like that.
Yeah, right. Actually, one thing I didn't tell in my talk is that it would be much nicer if there is only one nuclear reactor. Then they can calibrate by switching on and not switching off. But with 7 reactors like this, it is rather difficult. Except for next April, when all the 7 reactors will be shut down. But it's a kind of too early.
So they never shut them all down once except next April?
Yeah.
Is it 1 month?
Yeah.
They're shutting it down for some.
Well, there have been a lot of controversies that some people have found a crack in a concrete sheet, et cetera, et cetera, and they have to make sure that everything is going well, et cetera, et cetera.
Is that a lot of trouble? that point, CAMLAN will, this is what the biggest gap.
Oh, yeah, yes, 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 yes.
Yes. It does be something interesting.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
How long is the shutdown?
I don't know. Nobody actually knows.
Oh, I see. Those are both the CAMLAN that.
Part of CAMLAN.
Yes, yes.
Always.
I just want to be sure.
Can't shut it down for long.
Well, actually, they are still looking for a possible site, not only for this, but elsewhere in Japan. Because actually, the things are still changing. And at the noon conference, Soekane-san told us that there is some problem with 1.7 kilometer site. Namely, there is some water reservoir, and they would expect all kinds of protests against experiments. So actually, they may be even thinking of placing a far detector at 1.3 kilometers, which is actually inside the campus of power plant company. So then sensitivity may be even lower, yeah, in that case. Yes.
Do you see any spectral distortion at 1.7 kilometers?
Yeah, actually.
Seven reactors.
Yeah, actually, we are actually thinking of that possibility too. In other words, assuming that we can increase the detector size at far distance, like 2 kilometers, 3 kilometers, as long as we increase the detector size, probably it will give us more information, like spectral distortion. And that
you're better off looking for building a much bigger detector and looking for spectral distortion, since CAMLAN already built 1,000.
Right.
Than doing this two detector trip and so forth and trying to get 0.8% on systematic.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a question is, at what level of detector would you start seeing a spectral change?
Yeah.
Which might be much more of a smoking gun, so to speak.
Yeah, but somehow, if you go even farther, like 5 kilometers, somehow the information is not necessarily reserved, and we do not gain much by going farther. So probably 3 kilometers is the farthest you can place.
Didn't you take this into account? I mean, you did a...
Yeah, I did a technical.
You did
take
this into
account? Yeah. Energy spectrum.
Well, the idea was to try to... As I said, we're trying to look at the maximum, where the distortion in some way is the least. But you're trying to get the biggest effect at the center of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's right. One way.
That's not necessarily the
most significant.
No, but that seemed to be what they were choosing.
Yeah.
For the 1.7 kilometers, so you get the most biggest effect, but
some other position where you get a smaller effect with some shape of the spectrum.
Right, you get an effect which you
could measure with a bigger effect.
But then you really have to know the spectrum very well.
Yeah.
Because we're still looking for a very small effect, not like CAMLAN. The bigger effect. For a small effect, you then really got to know your spectrum
so
you really need a very good trustworthy near detector.
Yeah.
You also have to have energy resolution on the fire detector, know what the reaction.
Well, you need to know how the resolutions compare.
Yeah, but it's CAMLAN light. Now, CAMLAN got very good energy resolution, but that wouldn't be a problem. The other thing I noticed in all your plots, you never ever resolve the hierarchy problem.
Right, that is one thing we cannot do with shorter baseline.
It can never be done with this program.
Right.
It's too short of base.
Right.
It's a feature in the sense that you're not sensitive to that.
That's good and bad. Yeah.
It's good and bad.
Sometimes.
The rest of us are working like that.
Right.
Well,
right.
That's because the distance is too short.
There's still one thing that the Japanese can't do.
Right. Our land is too small.
Unless you go to China.
Just one more. Yeah. That's right. One more. Yeah.